It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Today's episode of the Nick Pop Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. It's officially that time of year. It's chilly out. It's winter. And if you're feeling the shiveries inside your house, you know what time it is. It's time to talk to your local Pella Omaha and Lincoln expert about taking a closer look at your windows. You can save energy, but most importantly, you can stay warm with windows from Pella that are properly installed the patented Pella way by professionals using window and doors with the highest energy efficiency ratings in the industry from Energy Star. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And the Nick Pop Podcast is brought to you by my good friends at Runza. I got two words for you. Temperature Tuesdays. That's right. Temperature Tuesdays are back at Runza. And every Tuesday in January and February, the coldest temperature in Runza land at 6 a.m. is the price you'll pay for an original Runza sandwich when you buy a medium fry and a medium drink. So take advantage of Temperature Tuesdays at Runza. And while you're there, tell them Nick Baugh sent you. All right, it's Wednesday, January 6th. Quick reminder to everyone to make sure you are mashing and crushing that subscribe button. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. And while you're there, leave a 5-star rating and a review. It all helps me out. And as always, I'll tell you once, tell you 1,000 times, I appreciate each and every one of y'all for listening and supporting this podcast. And on the podcast today, former Husker point guard Jake Muehlheisen, 4-year starter, 4-year captain. I grew up with Jake Muehlheisen. You know, I played high school basketball with Jake. He was 2 years older than me. He's one of my best friends, and he's one of my favorite human beings on earth. And he's now the radio color analyst for Husker Hoops alongside Kent Pavelka. So I thought, you know what, who better than Jake to bring on to discuss some Nebraska basketball? Certainly been a frustrating stretch for Fred Hoiberg's crew. You know, they're 4-7 overall, 0-4 in Big Ten play. I think they've lost now like 20 or 21 consecutive conference games, which is just, you know, maddening to really kind of say out loud. But, you know, Jake and I take a deep dive on this team and this season and what we are seeing and what we like and what we don't like and what we think needs to change and how we see the rest of the season playing out. So, Nebraska basketball fans, I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. So let's get to it. Here's my podcast chat with former Husker point guard, current Nebraska radio analyst, Jake Muehlheisen. Enjoy. Right, on the line now is former Southeast Knight, former small fry point guard of Home Real Estate, Jake Muehlheisen. Is that right? You were Home Real Estate, right? Is that right,
Jake? Home Real Estate, baby. We were Leaking Eagles for a little bit, but then we switched to Home Real Estate.
Do you remember? So I was on Valentino's. You beat us in the finals. Like, I think you were in fifth grade and I was in third grade. It was a tough day for me. Let me just tell you, it was a tough day.
I just remember you and Nate Woodstruck was legit back in the day.
Nate Woodstruck was like Gordon Hayward, the Gordon Hayward of small fry basketball. The dude was unbelievable, man.
Well, there were some good players in that league. As Rudy was on, Havelock Lions, yep. And then like Ty Graham and yep. Some of those guys. They were like the height restriction was what, 5'3", but they all had. I know like Ty Graham had a beard. When he was in seventh grade or whatever, however old you could be playing in that.
I always tell people, and you know, it's only people that know. So the small fry league was in Lincoln, and the games were at the Salvation Army. And I mean, the Salvation Army was basically Cameron Indoor Stadium. It was a tiny cracker box with like three sets of bleachers on both sides, and it was rocking in there. And you remember that the locker rooms were like down underneath, and it was really loud in there. You could hear the crowd. Like, I tell people all the time, the most nervous I think I ever was for any basketball games were small fry basketball when I was like in third grade.
For sure. I mean, and you felt like, you know, you'd always go to the Nebraska games and watch those teams come out, and having your own locker room as a as a 10 year old was like the coolest thing ever. You run out of the locker room and it felt like Allen Fieldhouse, yeah. Or you know, something that was just off the charts huge, and there was probably like 50 people there.
And people weren't even paying attention. And I was like, man, it was rocking in there last night. It was nuts. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of this Nebraska basketball team, you know, how do you think, we haven't talked about this. How do you think you would have handled COVID as a player? Like, go back to, you know, 18, 19, 20, 20-year-old Jake Muehlheisen. Because, like, I think basketball-wise, like, finding a way to stay in shape and work on my skills and all that stuff, I think I'd have been okay on that front. But socially is where I think I would have had a big problem. I like to go out. I like to have a good time. I like to party. I like to be around people. And so I'd have had a hard time with that. How do you think you would have handled it?
I agree. I think the working out and the weightlifting and doing that sort of thing, staying in shape, I'd have been fine. I think during season, I would have been fine. I lived with Barrett. I lived with Barrett, as you know, we were the most routine individuals ever. We watched 10 o'clock Seinfeld every night and went to bed at 10:30. So, I mean, it wasn't like we were out during season, especially that we were out doing anything crazy, but it would be more of the off season stuff where, you know, seeing your friends, seeing your family, getting out and about. I think that would have been super hard where just a simple a task of going home for Thanksgiving or Christmas, you know, this year was like pulling teeth to be able to do that and actually spend quality time and see the people you wanted to see. So I think from that aspect, especially the guys that, you know, weren't from Lincoln, that didn't have the luxury of driving, you know, mm-hmm. 2 miles to see their folks like I did, I think it would have been really hard for those guys.
So obviously you're also the Nebraska radio analyst. Obviously you've been having to do things remotely, broadcasting, not on site. I've had to do that a handful of times. I mean, I'm currently recording this from Charlotte and I'm calling games out of a studio. I mean, I did Marquette, UConn. Kugler was in his basement and I was in Charlotte and we're doing Marquette, UConn. It's bizarre. What's been the hardest part about not being at the games from a broadcasting standpoint?
Yeah, I think it's just getting the feel of the environment and what the vibe is at the game. I mean, you know, you show up a couple hours before, you can kind of feel the excitement at the arena, especially if you go to a place and the students are already there, you know it's going to be a big time game. And then, you know, like when you're calling the game last night, not being next to the guy you're calling with and just kind of feeling, you know, when he's going to stop, when he's going to keep going. We've had a couple times where the feed that we have is frozen or it skips. And especially for the play-by-play guy, I'm doing the color. You did the play-by-play the other night for the Michigan State game. But for the play-by-play guy, like Pavelka, I mean, he's having a bear of a time when it freezes for, you know, 5 seconds, all of a sudden, you know, a guy down the floor has the basketball and he's scoring. So he has no idea what's going on, but it's we're learning. I mean, we have each other on camera, which I'm sure you do too. So we can kind of see each other and read the body language, but I just miss seeing guys warming up, seeing what the atmosphere is like and just feeling the excitement in the arena.
The other thing I was thinking about is, you know, you probably haven't been able to be around Delano Banton and Teddy Allen and around the team at shoot around and watch a practice intimately sitting courtside. And when you're not able to do those things, I think that's a part of your job. Like, I think it's harder to get a sense of, hey, what's this guy's personality like? What's this team's chemistry like? What all those kinds of things. Or, hey, I know they walked over this at shoot around. This is how they're handling Aaron Henry's ball screens with whatever. And so I know they either handled this wrong or handled this right. Like, I also think that's been a way more challenging than I thought it would be. It kind of feels like you can do your prep, but without being around the guys, it's way harder.
Totally agree. And you know, we get to know those guys fairly well. And not that we're having long conversations with the players and whatnot, but just being around the coaches, talking with those guys, and like you said, being at shoot around, I hadn't gone to any practices at all this year. So you get to kind of learn a lot about a guy and what type of person they are, what type of player they are at practice. You know, are they a vocal leader? Are they a guy that is pretty quiet, leads by example? Do they say hi to you on the plane? You know, all those little things that you kind of miss this year. And even just having you know, conversations with coaches and you know, how they're feeling. You miss all that. And,
yes.
and you know, normally, you know, when you're traveling or even and getting down to the arena pretty early, you build a relationship with those guys. And right now, it feels like we're not even really a part of the team. It just feels like we're, you know, I go to a small room at the Husker Sports Network and and call the game and go home. It's just weird.
It is.
I know my wife likes it though. I'm home a lot earlier right. and not traveling to road games right now.
no doubt about it. This is like this is your wife's dream, my wife's dream here that we're not out and about as much. But
right.
do you think real quick? Last thing before we get into the team, do you think? I mean, I think no crowds make a difference. You know, like now ultimately, I don't know if this sounds hypocritical. Like, I think it makes a difference, but that's also not to say that I don't think ultimately the good teams won't still be the good teams. You know, like, I think there maybe are a few incidents of a game here, a game there that might go different. And honestly, I think it's maybe more the middle of the pack teams that get hurt the most because, you know, who knows? Maybe the other night against Michigan State, when Nebraska cuts it to 4 late, PBA's rocking, and they're able to dig in and get a stop and get a bucket. You know, like, and then all of a sudden you build some momentum. I guess, how do you see the no crowd factor?
I think it's a big part of this year, and it's hard to put your finger on. I think you're spot on where I think those upper tier teams, it doesn't really impact them. They kind of have that swag and kind of the culture where they're going to win a game if it's tight either way, if they have the crowd behind them. But, you know, I go back to the Nevada game and the Georgia Tech game.
Yep.
And when we played at PBA and lost those close ones where, you know, the Nevada and Georgia Tech, they're the middle tier teams where I think the crowd could have sped them up tremendously. Especially when, at that point in the season, we were getting a lot of steals and turnovers and getting some fast break opportunities where, I think the crowd would have been into it big time. And where we've struggled too is when we're not scoring and we're not playing as hard defensively because we don't have the energy where the crowd can really give you a jolt, especially on that end. So I think it's a big part of this season, you know, across the country where, you know, you're seeing some teams win some road games at arenas that normally the road team doesn't leave there with a victory very often.
No.
So I think it's a big piece to this year and, but I think the better teams will be just fine.
So let's get into this team specifically. I mean, they're struggling, obviously. I mean, they're 0-4 in Big Ten play, 4-7 overall. I think they've lost now like 20 or 21 straight conference games, which is just still just mind-blowing. From a broad sense, what's been the most surprising thing to you so far with this team? Is there one single – is it a player? Is it an element? Is it a part of the game? What's maybe surprised you the most?
I mean, let's just start with a couple of players that have surprised me and not, I guess, probably not in a good way would be, you know, Lad Mayan, I thought was going to shoot the ball a lot more consistent. I think he is a really good shooter. I just think he's lacking confidence right now. And him and Kobe Webster, you know, those two guys haven't really been able to get it going for this team yet. I think the other thing that surprised me is just the lack of rhythm we've been able to get into offensively. I think we have the guys that can score, that can be effective offensively, but I think we just haven't been able to get into a rhythm. And whatever that is, just inconsistent shooting. Maybe it's you know, sometimes the ball is sticking sometimes. And as you know, dude, I think when shots aren't falling, especially for guys that have seen them go in their entire career, you know, that when the doubt starts to creep in and then you're not able to win on top of it, then it just, it's kind of like that quicksand effect. I think that's what's kind of what the team is facing now. But I think the lack of consistent shooting by some guys and just the lack of rhythm offensively has surprised me the most as far as the negatives. But, you know, I will say this though, the defensive side of the ball, I think that surprised me too, where we've proven when we're locked in, we can be elite defensively. So that surprised me too. I didn't know how good we could be on that end of the floor, but I think if I would like their mental focus to shift, hey, let's just focus on being a really good team defensively, and offense will come. That surprised me on the length and the rebounding. And that's the good side of the surprise. The bad side is just a lack of shooting.
You know, I was writing down questions for you, and sometimes we can overcomplicate things. Like, the reality is, if we were to say, okay, what's Fred Hoiberg want, what does he want for the identity of this team and his program? He wants pace and threes. Well, the team's not shooting very well from three. And I know they're like KenPom tempo numbers and all those things are pretty good. I don't think this team's playing with near the same pace that it played with at times last year, and that I know that Coach Hoiberg wants them to play at. So, like, basketball is hard when the two things you were going to try to really lean on aren't there. Could it be just as simple as that? Like, they're not getting out and running as much as I think they could, and they're not making shots.
Yeah, I think that's dead on. I think a lot of it has to do with their confidence. You look at the first five games of the year when, you know, obviously McNeese State's not a high caliber team, but we're out and running.
Yeah.
And even when the North Dakota State team, who's a quality team, when it was basically a tie ball game with about 12 or 10 minutes to play, and then we just blew the doors off because we got the tempo where we wanted it to be. And we had that against Nevada for a little bit. We had it against Georgia Tech for a little bit. But then once we started to miss shots, and I think the lack of the man, I don't think we know who the man is yet, who's going to control the ball a lot of the time. And sometimes it's Teddy, sometimes it's Trey, sometimes it's Delano. So I think that is playing into it. But I think it's just the confidence. I mean, when you're thinking about your shot and not just playing hoops, it's hard to get out and run and really push the tempo and trust pulling up and transition for a three. So I think the confidence has a big part of our tempo and pace and just lack of shooting right now.
Yeah, you know, you brought up the who's kind of dominating the ball, and I think one of the issues is, and what I'm about to say doesn't, I'm not saying these guys aren't good players, but I don't think, this is just me, you can disagree, I don't think Nebraska has a true run your team point guard. Like, just because you can handle the ball and pass doesn't necessarily mean you're a run the show guy. Like, I think Banton can do those things, and he's got great size, but he's kind of methodical. He doesn't play as fast with the ball. The ball does kind of stick with him a little bit. Again, good player. I think he's really good as like a secondary ball handler. And then I think McGowan's is more of a combo guard scorer than he is a run the team guy. You were a point guard. Like, I think I was liking, you know, the difference between handling the ball and running the team is the difference between babysitting and parenting. Like, yeah, you're watching the kids, but it's way different. How do you see the point guard spot?
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. I think let's start with Delano. I think he's learning, how to be a better point guard and really be that guy to kind of dictate the offense. But there's some times when he's running the point, and man, the offense looks good. And then there's the next time down, you're like, I don't know what that was. But I think with his size, I think he can be a really good point guard. But I think he's learning to keep that pace. And sometimes he just stops being aggressive too. And I think that he needs to always have his foot on the gas and not trying to make plays for himself, but just trying to make plays for everybody. But I think he can be that guy. I just think he's learning his role from that spot. I think Trey McGowan's, I think he's 100% a combo guard. I think he's a 2-3 slasher scorer. I don't think he's a true point guard. Kobe Webster has shown it sometimes too, but it's kind of been point guard by committee when we need Delano to really kind of step up and be that leader. But he, you know, being only a sophomore and with what, 11 new guys again,
it's hard.
They're all trying to figure out their roles too, where they just kind of have that little bit of hesitancy rather than going out and playing and knowing exactly where everybody's going to be at.
Right. Yeah, it's weird. I was not, full disclosure, I was not a Cam Mack fan. But Cam Mack, I think in terms of what Fred wanted with pushing the ball, Cam Mack provided that more than anyone on this team does. But I say that to say, do I like Delano Banton and Trey McGowan's more? Hell yeah, I do. So it's kind of weird. It's like, you know, I like these two players more, but there's no doubt that Cam Mack, like, he was faster with the ball, and I thought just Hanif Cheatham ran the floor hard. I just, like, I find myself, when I watch Nebraska play, I keep on saying, go, go, go. Like I just feel like when they get an outlet, they gotta play with more urgency, and I think that would maybe help them. Because I know for me, like, whenever I hit a slump offensively, I think the more you can just, like, play, like, I think the more it got bogged in the half court was the more I started thinking too much. I think it would help these guys if they just turned it loose and push it.
Yeah, I think that's what Fred wants. I think there's some times that he's frustrated, and go back to our conversation with not being at the arena. It's hard to tell, you know, his demeanor on the sidelines, which we could if we were there. But when we get some rebounds, sometimes, you know, we have so many guys that can push it, but instead of supermaning it and taking it up the floor themselves, they'll try to find Delano, which slows the breakdown. Where if they can find Delano or just push it themselves, like kind of like we did last year, we can get that pace. But I think if we can get that tempo and try to put pressure on the defense and get some easy ones early, because we haven't been able to do that the last couple of games.
No.
And you know this, I mean, basketball is a game of easy baskets, and, right. And that's what Coach Hoiberg wants. He wants shots at the rim or threes. And I think if we could try to attack the rim off the break before the defense can get set, I mean, that could go a long ways to get our confidence back, just to get some ones, especially early on in the game. But I think you'll see that happen more often where Fred will try to get these guys to outlet it better, get a cleaner outlet and really push the tempo. And I mean, think about Delano. He's 6'7", 6'8". I mean, he can finish at the rim if he gets the outlet.
Let's take a quick break to talk to you about my longtime pals and loyal supporters of the podcast, Pella Windows and Doors. You know, Pella has a window type for every home and every budget. And you might know Pella for its award-winning wood windows, but did you know that Pella also has a complete line of industry-leading patented fiberglass and vinyl windows? Pella's fiberglass windows use a patented Duracast material, more durable than aluminum or vinyl, made from a composite material used in the aerospace industry for its strength, durability, and temperature resistance. It's big time right there. And Pella's vinyl window series offer all the features that make it one of the most energy efficient windows on the market, with the same value and style you've come to expect from all Pella products, with outstanding structural integrity, built from multi-chambered, fully welded frames and sashes. Pella's vinyl windows assure a quieter, more comfortable home. Bottom line, Pella's vinyl and fiberglass windows are really, really cool. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And while we're here, let's talk about my good friends at Runza. Got another super secret menu item not a lot of people know about. My friends at Runza are hooking me up, and I'm going to let you in on it. This one's just, this one's near and dear to my heart, because it's a twist on the best fries on earth. Runza's Crinkle Fries. It's Runza's Chili Cheese Fries. That's some legendary Runza Crinkle Fries topped with their homemade chili and cheddar cheese sauce. Let me say that again in case some of you passed out just thinking about it. Legendary Runza Crinkle Fries. Homemade chili, cheddar cheese sauce. Oh my goodness. It's a side that eats like a meal. So there you go. Another super secret menu item exclusively for Nick Bob Podcast listeners. So stop in, order the chili cheese fries and Runza. And while you're there, I'll tell them Nick Bob sent you. Okay, back to the podcast. No question. I mean, when he's got a head, him and the, when Trey and Delano are coming at you, and hell, even Teddy's not as imposing, if that makes sense, but he, you know, he's got a way about him of getting to his spots, but like, they have guys that, like, if you're backpedaling and Trey McGowan's is coming at you, you're in trouble. And if you're backpedaling and Delano Banton's really coming at you with urgency and he does his little Euro step through and get the ball up and over it, like, you're going to foul or he's going to get a good shot. I just find myself, like I said, saying, like, push it, run. When I'm watching him on film or watching him, I'm just like, you guys need to get out and run more. But, and like you said, you know that's what Fred wants. And so – I think eventually they'll get to that. Do you think – I want to talk about Teddy Allen, because it's weird because, listen, super talented scorer, and there's no question that Nebraska needs his offense, but what's hard is, you know, he takes really tough shots, and the ball does kind of stick with him a little bit. So there's this weird spot that I think Coach Hoiberg's in where it's like – on one hand, we need Teddy scoring, but on the other hand, we sometimes sacrifice what we want things to look like offensively to accommodate that scoring. So it's kind of a weird, you know, rock and a hard place with Teddy. And again, I mean, the guy's just it's ridiculous what he can do scoring the ball. What do you see with Teddy?
Yeah, I hadn't watched Teddy play a whole lot prior to this season, and I didn't get to go down to any practices, like I said. So watching him play, I mean, the dude can score, and it's crazy how quickly he can put up 10, 12, 14 points in a half. And I think you saw Coach adjust a little bit in that Michigan State game where he pulled Teddy out early in that second half when he didn't like what he was doing.
Right.
And I think you're going to start seeing more of that as this season goes on. But you're right where, you know, early on we needed him on the floor to score, but there were some times that the ball just stuck and it wasn't in the confines of the offense or how Coach Hoiberg wanted it to look, but everybody's still trying to learn their role at the time. So I think you'll see him, you know, maybe pull Teddy out and sub someone in if he's not doing what he's supposed to do. But you know, what I would like Teddy to do more is he's talented on the defensive side too, but he sometimes, if he's not getting the ball and getting some looks up, he sometimes doesn't want to get back as urgently as he should. Mm-hmm. But the dude can flat out score, and he's got some crazy old man YMCA crafty moves in the paint, and it's like, how in the heck do you make that?
Right, it's crazy. Like,
it's
The thing that's a pretty amazing compliment to Teddy is I think about all the basketball players that I've played with, played against, or just watched, period. And I'm not sure I've ever seen anybody that plays like Teddy. Have you?
No, he's got like the old man awkward game. And, you know, his jumper from three is like a kind of a set shot right. type jumper. And then he'll post you up. He'll like do some hook shots in there. Some of the scores that he's made around the basket where you think that he's just pinched in between the defender and the baseline, and then he makes a little scoop shot, and like you look over, you're like, I don't know how he made that. But the dude is like, when he gets going like he did in a few games here, it's like, God, he had 2 points at half, and now he has 25.
Right. I mean, Jake, you played in the Big 12. Like, you know what it's like in a high major conference. Like, for you to have 17 or 20 points and a half is really, really hard. Like, really hard.
Yeah, and not only doing that, but it's not like he was taking 50 shots. The dude was making everything that he looked at. And that's what, you know, when Hoiberg has a guy like that, you saw that set against Michigan State at the timeout when they ran that little pin-down flare screen for Teddy. And it's like, he just drains it. Like that's what Hoiberg can do with these guys if they start getting in that rhythm. But Teddy can fill it up, and you know, I kind of wondered why he had that nickname, but I think everybody knows now why that he has that nickname.
You know, the one thing I will say with Teddy though, like, and I would love to, if I was a coach, I would love to pull Teddy aside and say this. He'd be like, Teddy, hey man, I don't want to change you, and I don't want you to lose that chip on your shoulder and that edge that you play with, but you got to have better control and better control of your emotions and better control of not fouling. Like, he's developed a problem here in conference play in particular where he's gotten into foul trouble. It hurt at Wisconsin. It hurt against Michigan State. Like, a part of being the man is the responsibility of providing your team what they need, and they need your ass on the floor. Okay, so you can't get dumbass fouls, and you can't get too caught up in some one-on-one thing where all of a sudden you lose sight of what's happening with the game. Does that make sense? Like, I think Teddy needs that too.
I agree. You probably agree with me here too, but you got to love, you know, his passion and him getting after those dudes and talking some trash. I like that part of the game.
Right.
Just so long, like you said, it doesn't cross that line of losing the focus of what you're there to do, and that's win the game.
Right.
And his fouls, I mean, some of his fouls are 80 feet away from the basket, and just, you know, him just being aggressive and losing focus for a little bit. And both him and Latmine have both done that, especially, like you said, in conference play. and we need those dudes on the floor to win. So we just can't afford the mental errors, and it's kind of like in football where, you know, you had the mental errors of jumping off sides or doing some of those things where you just can't afford those in basketball either. And we don't have the latitude or the grace that some teams have. They can get away with some of those mistakes and still win. We don't have that. We have to play a pretty clean game, especially in the Big Ten, to get a win.
You know, go back to Lat for a second, because you brought up, like, his shot making or lack thereof has been a big problem. Like, because when I think of, you know, because McDermott and Hoiberg run a similar system, you know, at least the stuff that they're predicated upon. And watching Creighton for a decade now with Coach McDermott, like, there are two positions in particular that are super important. The point guard, and we've talked about that, but then you're a four-man that can stretch the floor and make threes. And if you think about kind of going, man, this Hoiberg offense hasn't totally looked like I thought it would look. Well, we talked about the point guard situation, but if you think about it, last year, Kavas didn't shoot it well. Kevin Cross didn't shoot it well. This year, Lat hasn't shot it well. Like, when you're not getting three-point production from that four, everything kind of changes. Like, if I had to pick, there's a lot of guys that need to play better, but I think if Lat started shooting better, I think everything would look different.
Totally. And you know, the pick and pop game changes our offense a ton. And then just think about the driving lanes it opens up for Trey McGowan's, for Thor, for Teddy, and those guys, Delano, that can get to the paint. If guys are hitting shots from the perimeter, especially Lat, where he's getting looks, and I will say his jumper looks pretty. It just, I think it's all between the years now where he's thinking about it. And he drained the one against Michigan State when he had to just catch and shoot it when he wasn't thinking, and he drills it. So I think if he was shooting, let's just say he was shooting 38%, which I think he can totally do, it changes the complete look of our offense and how we run things, not only through him, but set him in spots to where he's almost the decoy in some situations to give some driving lanes to some guys that can slash through the paint.
What about the one thing I will say, and, you know, I mean, this is just, I've always felt basketball is a confidence and chemistry sport. You got to have confidence individually, and you got to have chemistry with your teammates and confidence in your teammates. And the only way to get that is to, like, play with guys and have success. Well, these guys haven't played together a ton and they haven't had a lot of success, so it stands to reason that they would be kind of lacking in some of those areas. When you think back to your career, whether you were hooping with me at Lincoln Southeast, or I'm sure you could look in Barrett's eyes and know, you know, you could trust him and the chemistry and the confidence were there. Same thing at Nebraska with, you know, whether it was Turek or Drevo or whoever you were out there doing your thing with. Like, what does that look like? How do you kind of characterize that? Because I do think there is some of that that's lacking where – When they have kind of gotten punched at times, they've not reacted well in a game, and by the time they do kind of like stop the bleeding, it's kind of too late.
Well, yeah, let's go back to our COVID conversation. These guys all arrived during COVID, all new to the team, and as you know, you got to know all your teammates. You know, not only obviously we knew each other at Southeast, but you arrived at KU and at Creighton. You got to know your teammates off the floor.
Yep.
And yeah, they can hang out, you know, in their dorm or their apartments and all that, but they haven't been able to get out and about and really spend time with their teammates as much as they probably could have pre-COVID. So I think that's part of it. I really do. And the better you know your teammates, the better you're going to play on the floor. And I just think that they haven't been through it. They didn't get the exhibition game. They didn't get the close scrimmage. They thought they may not have even played. So I think there's so many things in that equation that played into the chemistry part of it. But I think they need a win so bad too that if they could have beat Georgia Tech or Nevada in a close game and proven that what they're doing is working, or even beat Wisconsin or, you know, even one of those Big Ten games that they're in, that goes a long ways to chemistry as well, because then you know, well, what we're doing in practice is working. You know, I know that he's going to make those shots when we need them. It just, a win for this team could go a long ways in trying to build that chemistry and hopefully get some more wins in Big Ten as the season keeps going on.
Even something as little as, like, I vividly remember my freshman year, the first time the entire team was invited to Coach Self's house. And I remember feeling so exponentially better and more comfortable and more connected to everyone. Because there's something about, like, going to your coach's house, and it just, you feel, you know, everybody talks about, like, we're a family. Like, you, in some ways, you're not really a family until you, like, do stuff like that. And it's like, you can't do that. They can't go to Coach Hoiberg's house and all get together and go, you know, barbecue outside or whatever. And so it's not just even, like, moments hanging out socially with your teammates. It's even, like, get-togethers like that that just make a huge difference that are not available to them.
Not at all. And you know, that's why Coach Self did that. They know that it builds you know, the bonds that you guys have and the relationships that, and then it carries over to the floor. And you know, all these teams, especially a team like Nebraska, where they've had so many new guys coming in, that they didn't have that luxury of doing stuff like that. I think that's a big part of this season. I think we have the dudes. We obviously have the coaching staff. So it's you know, what's going on with this team and why aren't they winning? And a lot of it has to do with that chemistry and the bonds that they haven't quite been able to build yet. I think it's getting there. But I haven't been on a road trip yet, but even on road trips, you're hanging out with the entire team a lot of the time, and maybe they're not doing that as much this year because of COVID.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of things at play when it comes to the chemistry side of things. And again, I mean, you know this, dude, I think you get a win, and a win can cure a lot of things and shift that psyche to the good side of the ledger and get some confidence going.
Right, right. Two or three more things. We're out of here, Mule. Real quick, Derek Walker, he's going to make his debut, the Tennessee transfer, in the next game. He's got to help, man. I mean, I don't necessarily think we got, like, you know, I mean, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar ready to enter into the game. But, like, there is a reality to Nebraska still has some size issues in the interior, especially defensively, and he's a big body. I know you haven't been able to be around him or anything like that, but I think you got to see him a little bit last year. Do you think Derek Walker makes a big impact?
I think he does, and I think the biggest impact I see him making, and like you said, he's not Kareem, but when I went to practices last year, he was very vocal. Mm-hmm. Even as a guy that's redshirting, he was a super vocal guy in practice, and I love to see that. And I think he could be that vocal leader that we're kind of missing right now. Because if you had to pick one guy that's their vocal guy on the floor now, you really can't pick one.
No.
So I hope he's that dude, and I think he's been trying to do that, but it's really hard to be that guy and you know, get after your teammate when you're not playing. It's just hard to do. It really is. So I think from a leadership standpoint, I think he's going to be huge. And then you got to have size in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Rebounding and defensively. And you go back to the conversation about getting defensive rebounds and getting it outletted. I think he can be that guy. And he's been a part of a winning program. I mean, when you get a team that you're on goes to the tournament like Tennessee did, that helps too. So I think that he will be that guy from a leadership perspective.
Two more things just kind of on coaching and big picture stuff. Like, I don't see a glaring coaching issue or something like that. Like, I don't – defensively, I see what they're trying to do, and it's good. Offensively, I see what they're trying to do. It's good. You know, whenever you're losing, people start to kind of question things a little bit. Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I do think the roster makeup is interesting in some ways, but at some point, like, players got to make plays, you know. Like, I mean, Fred Hoiberg gets out a dry erase board and dials up a wide open shot for Lat. Like, he's got to make it. Like, I don't, you know, like, he's got to knock it down. So it's, I don't see any sort of glaring, like, I haven't one time walked away from a game being like, tell you what, Fred Hoiberg, yikes, he had a rough day today. Like, I haven't felt that way.
No, not even close. And I think the game plans have been great for all the games. And, yeah, you look at all the games, and we've gotten off to great starts. You know, we've obviously played some good competition, and we played toe-to-toe with them, other than the Ohio State game. Throw that one out of the window. That we've competed, and we're in the games for 25, 30 minutes. And you're not you're not competing with Wisconsin and Creighton and Michigan if you don't have a good game plan. So I don't think I've never thought that. And guys got to make shots.
Yeah.
And we turned the ball over too many times against Michigan State as well. And so there's just some mental errors that we're making. I think one thing I know that I would assume that Fred wants to clean up, if you watch some of the film, I don't think we're setting good enough screens to get guys open.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, the game plans are there, man. I mean, make some plays. And you know, Pavelko was giving me a hard time on the radio the other day. He asked me what my 3-point shooting percentage was for my career. And I was quite embarrassed to say that it was only 30%. Because I'm like, you got to make those shots. He's like, what was your percentage? And I go, Jesus. But guys got to make shots. I mean, it just is. That's what it comes down to, is simplify the game. And if he can drop the best play in the world, but guys got to make plays.
We're out of here after this. And we've talked about this a handful of times on the podcast, and it'll kind of continue to be a theme. Like, there's been some people that have questioned the blueprint. You know, can you do this? Can you do the transfer thing, all this stuff? Like, absolutely you can. You know, like, the plan is fine. The blueprint works. But I do think somewhere along the line, with all the one-year transfers that you bring in, they do need to really establish some core group that is together to create some foundation. Like, I do think this is important. And, I mean, it's great that you're going to get, Bryce McGowan's, Trey's brother, that the five-star kid. I would say if you're a five-star kid, you're likely not going to be here for more than 2 years. But it just, like, and I hate to pit it against Creighton, because naturally these two programs always are against each other. But, like, yeah, Creighton's had Marcus Foster and Maurice Watson and different transfers. But they've had Zagorowski, high school kid, Ballock, high school kid, Christian Bishop, high school kid. Like, they've had foundational guys that I still think that's something I know I'm going to be watching for, is like just some core group. Doesn't have to be your best players, but a core group that provides some stability with the roster.
Yeah, I think their blueprint will work, and I think there's got to be some stability. I think they want that too. I think, you know, like for example, I think Eduardo Andre is going to be a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he can be one of those foundational pieces. You bring in the big kid from California, yep. Braden Bach, coming in as a freshman, and even Bryce McGowan's for that. I think you can create that foundation with bringing those guys in, and then have some transfers come in as well. I think you had Delano Banton, who's a sophomore, even Trey McGowan. I think those guys will build some foundation for us and some continuity as well. But you look around the league and you look at a team like Wisconsin, where they're starting basically five seniors, and they've been there forever. And you see how they play.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to have some of that continuity, and it's just from a culture standpoint. But I think they'll get the guys that they need to get. Their blueprint obviously works, and you can definitely win with what they're doing. But I think they do want some of those guys coming in. Whether it be a sophomore or a freshman coming in and creating those guys that are here for at least 3 or 4 years.
Jake Muehlheisen, you the man, brother. This was great. We'll have to catch up, maybe towards the, we'll let some games kind of pass. I do think, like, I don't know. It feels like they're a long ways away, but man, I don't know. Like, they were within four to Michigan State, late. I didn't even feel like they actually, Nebraska played all that well. Like, I don't know. I think Nebraska could, and like we've said, they just need to get a win, and maybe things can kind of get rolling here.
Yeah, I do. And Coach says this too. I mean, I feel like they're really close,
right?
And I do. I feel that way. And if they can just make some shots, and not only that, but even if they could win an ugly game, and that's where I go back. If they can just play and try to be an elite defensive team and just win a game. All they got to do, they get that dang monkey off their back now, because now it's starting to build up and kind of be that mental block a little bit. So they just need to win. I think they're closer than what that record shows. I wish obviously we would have played last night against Purdue, but
right.
And hopefully this COVID stuff goes away. But
mm-hmm.
they just need to win, man.
Jake Muehlheisen, Jake, awesome stuff as always, man. We'll catch up.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right, my thanks to Pella. If you're thinking about a new window or a new door, now is the time. Check them out online on the web at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And my thanks to my good friends at Rumza. Best fries on the planet. Great burgers. Cheese Runza. Delicious. The food is simply fantastic. Runza makes it all better.
a Huda Media production.